Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Network on Sunday, July 29th, 2007. This is show 374. Well, a very good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about technology. I'd love to chat with you about it. All the myriad forms of technology, whether it's cameras, cell phones, MP3 players, home theater, I mean, HDTV, all of that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. And we could talk about it. And then there's a lot to talk about, as I said. You can also visit the chat room. We've got a good one going. irc.dslextreme.com. irc.dslextreme.com. If you've got software, IRC software, you can use that. If you don't, just go to that site, and software will be provided for you. And, of course, the show notes are online at techguylabs.com. I labored over the interim last night and put a Google map up there of all the shows, the stations. Isn't that nice? You could click on it. I love Google Maps. We got to do a frapper. You want to put a frapper on? I think I have a frapper somewhere. You know, frapper, F-R-A-P-P-R. It's a traditional Web 2.0 name. You leave out the last vowel. Frapper is a Google Map mashup where somebody's put it together, and you can put pins in a map, basically. And we had a Frapper map for the show at one time. I'll have to see if I could find it. See if you can find it, Shoopy, because we could because I have so many more listeners now all over the world. I'd love to find out where they all are. So you just go, we'll give you the address. We'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. And once we get the address, you can go there and you can put your pin in the map where you listen, and we'll see where everybody is. That'd be a lot of fun. A lot of bloggers right now in Chicago for the Daily Coast Convention. It's an interesting phenomenon, the blogging phenomenon. You know what a blog is. It's short for weblog. It's a web page. It's all it is. It's a web page. A web page where there's a bit of a promise from the person who writes it to update it daily. Although many blogs like mine are updated, it's not quite so often. It's still a blog. But the theory would be that it's a journal. It started originally as a link log, where you would put in your sites that you were interested in, or stuff you were reading, stuff you were looking at, just to back when the web was in its infancy, 10 years ago. These first started because people would say, "Hey, here's some sites you might not have seen." You know, we still do that, don't we? Dr. Webb does that. We still do all of that. Well, now they've got blogs about top politics and fashion and society. And bloggers are more now than just hobbyists. A lot more than hobbyists. Bloggers are big time. Perez Hilton. Did you see the article about him in the Sunday paper today? It's not his real name. It's a playoff, Paris Hilton. But Perez Hilton's gossip blog is huge. Huge. That's where people go to get the latest trashy gossip. Nowadays, you go to the web. Why wouldn't you? It's much more up to date. Nicole Richie going to jail? Well, where do you go to find out? Perez Hilton. He'll give you the scoop and probably dirty pictures to go with it. In fact, he's been attacked, sued, taken to court because he reprints paparazzi pictures. You know, the paparazzi make lots of money off these pictures, selling them to the other gossip rags. Perez just reprints them. He says, hey, fair use. Drives him crazy. PerezHilton.com. And now the Daily Coast, which is a political blog. I'm just looking at PerezHilton.com. You can't help but not laugh at PerezHilton.com. Celebrity juice, not from concentrate, he says. And the last post, Lindsay's career is dead, with a terrible, poor Lindsay Lohan, terrible picture of her. It, you know, if it weren't for Paris Hilton, Nicole Richie, Lindsay Lohan, I don't know if he'd have much to write about, frankly. Site not for children, by the way. not for grown-ups with any taste either. Now, the Daily Kos is another matter entirely. It's a political blog, and has become a kind of a must-read. D-A-I-L-Y-K-O-S has become a must-read for people, for political junkies. What's interesting now is they're having their big blogger convention, their Daily Kos convention in Chicago, and they've got, I think, 5 presidential candidates are there. John Edwards, Hillary Clinton, shunning the DNC's meeting to go to a blogger meetup. That's how powerful this is. I think the presidential candidates realize this year, if you want to win, you're going to need the hearts and minds, and I guess votes, of the internet generation. Daily Kos was founded by a guy named Marcos. That's where the KOS comes from. Marcos Mulitzas Zuniga in 2002. And now it's huge, just huge. A lot of contributors. It's not just Marcos writing it. A lot of contributors, some big names and some little names who write in it. Including people like Jimmy Carter, Bob Kerry, John Edwards, Birch Bayh. And in fact, if you look at the list of current office holders who have contributed content, it's long, including Deborah Bowen. We were talking about the Secretary of State of California, talking about her yesterday. Barbara Boxer, Senator from California. Russ Feingold, Tom Harkin, John Kerry, Chuck Schumer, Henry Waxman. I mean, it's a long list. So you could see the power of this blogging phenomenon is just phenomenal, whether it's on in the trash the end of the spectrum with Perez Hilton, or on the political side of the spectrum with Daily Kos. I just think it's amazing that there are so many people in Chicago right now to meet with these bloggers. I mean, this is huge. Do you read any blogs? I'd love to hear from you if you do. Is there something you think is a must read? You've got to read every day or every few days. You make it part of your beat check. 8888 Ask Leo. How long before we stop getting our news from print, TV, radio, and start getting it on the internet? Isn't that what's next? That's what newspapers are saying. Newspapers are having a tough time competing. In fact, the publisher of the New York Times said he didn't think in 10 years he'd still be printing a paper newspaper. New York Times has moved very much to the online front. We talked, remember, a few months ago about the client, the Windows-based New York Times client. That's so cool. It's a great way to read a paper on a computer screen. Solves all those issues people have about reading on the screen, or many of them anyway. Times is also moving into podcasting. They do audio, video. They see the future. And it makes sense, because print costs a lot. The paper, the truck, the ink, it's very expensive. And if you don't care, if you're willing to read their material online, that saves them a lot of money. The writers are the least expensive part of the whole equation. Oh, they're cheap. In fact, when you look at blogs like the Daily Kos, they're nothing. These people contribute to the Daily Kos for free just because they want to get the exposure. So the content is cheap. The other thing that's killing newspapers, of course, is sites like Craigslist. Because the chief source of revenue for most newspapers is the classified ads, and people are not using them anymore. When you could use the free Craigslist and get better results, why use a classified ad? With the Craigslist and a lot of other companies going into the classified ad space, forget it. Good article about Perez Hilton in the Sunday New York Times. See, they're embracing it. I think it was it the Times or the Chronicle? Probably your Sunday newspaper, where they're talking about the Daily Kos convention in Chicago. It's really interesting to see presidential candidates showing up there and saying, we would like your vote. Do you think it's really that there's a lot of voters who read these things, or just that these guys are influential, or is it just make you look cool? I think some of it, a lot of it might be just it makes you look cool, hip, and with it. And you realize that to some voters, whether or not they read these blogs, it's a way of saying I'm up on the latest stuff, right? Five top candidates are going to this event. Skipping the Democratic Leadership Council in Tennessee. That's the group that Bill Clinton led and got him elected in 92. That shows you what's changed since in 15 years. The DLC, which got Clinton elected in 92, was where Clinton really began his march toward the presidency. Now, 15 years later, his wife is running, spurns the DLC, and goes instead to a blogger convention, something that wasn't even invented in 1992. The web was 3 years old in 19. Nobody knew what the web was in 1992. That's how quickly this stuff changes. In just a few elections, look what happened to Howard Dean and how he raised so much money 4 years ago, and now he's the president or the chairman of the Democratic Party. He's not the president. No, sorry. Didn't mean to scare anybody. Nothing happened overnight. And Howard Dean is not the president. I'd like to talk to you, though, about this. What's your blogs? What do you read? Got questions about Windows, Mac? If you got suggestions, things to buy, you want to know about cell phones, home theater, that's what we talk about on this show. And I'm going to open up the lines right now. 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. I want to hear from you. I am Leo Laporte with Tech Guy. Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO.
You may find yourself in a shotgun shack
on this radio show.
And you may find yourself
8888-ASK-LEO. The video cameras are up. I don't know why people have a morbid fascination with them, but you can look over my shoulder if you would like at stickam.com, stickam.com, or you can look me full in the face. Ooh. At ustream.tv, or see both at twit.tv/live. That's the best place. You can get both then. But if you do that, you'll want to mute the audio because it'll be very confusing if you don't. Because there's also audio and everything's out of sync. Everything's coming in at a different time. It makes no sense whatsoever. Let's go to Hollywood. What do you say? Eric on the line. Hello, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo? Big
Great.
Fan.
Thanks.
My brother Alex in Andover, Massachusetts is actually an even bigger fan. He got me into you here.
Is he listening in Andover? Say hi. Hello.
He is.
Hey.
He is.
How you doing,
Alex?
That's cute, isn't it? That's
anyway.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm a creative type. I just moved out here. I'm in Hollywood for the temporary, well, hopefully permanent future.
Living the dream, baby. Living the dream.
Exactly. But so, of course, I bought a Mac. But it's tough to leave the safety net of Windows.
You're kind of required, aren't you, if you're going to show up at a meeting?
Well,
talk to art directors. They're going to say you did this on what? Windows.
Maybe.
Though Photoshop is exactly the same.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm so afraid to use Photoshop on Windows because it's just like it's so shaky and it's so clunky.
Is that true? I didn't know that. Really, it bombs out.
It seems to be clunky for me, at least. I feel more secure using it on a Mac. Yeah. So I don't know. I got all these creative programs and stuff, and it feels, even though I have one, that it's tough to leave the safety net of Windows. You know, for lack of safety on Windows. So anyway, I'm running boot camp. Just, in case I get a little homesick for the former OS.
Okay.
It hasn't happened yet, curiously enough. But anyway, I made my Windows partition too big, and
right.
I want to resize it because basically I want to install that huge Final Cut Studio, things like at least 50 gigs and probably 60-something gigs
of
memory.
Yeah.
Or of hard drive.
Are you on a laptop?
So I am on a desktop, curiously enough. It's actually it's an iMac, so it's doesn't have the extra internal bay.
Yeah, but you're going to want to get an external FireWire drive because you're just not going to have enough room to do video anyway.
And funny enough, like I already have one by Western Digital. I love that company.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
But I already have one, but it's weird because they want you to install the program file on the actual internal.
Yeah, Apple often does that. I like to install my applications in my own My Applications folder and not in the program, the main applications folder. But many applications from Apple particularly won't let you put them anywhere but the applications folder, and Final Cut's one of them.
Yeah.
So you need to have that extra room. You can repartition, but it's destructive.
Really?
Yeah. There is nothing like, unfortunately, partition magic on the Mac side. Now, you can try, if you're brave, you can try a Linux utility that's free called gparted that might allow you to do this. But you really run the risk of destroying your data anyway. So no matter what, you're going to back up the whole thing anyway. I'm glad you have an external drive. That'll make it easier.
Oh yeah.
There's a program called SuperDuper.
Okay.
That's free to use in its basic mode, and then if you want a little, you know, scheduling and stuff, it's more expensive. You can pay for it, but the free program will do what you need, which is it'll make an image backup of your drive.
Oh.
And it's a good thing to have for your backup. SuperDuper.
All right, super duper. And also, what was I going to say? Because somebody recommended to me at the Mac store, they said to put your program file on the internal hard drive and then put everything else on the external. And then I don't even know how to do that because it never lets me do that. It's just,
yeah,
you know,
it would require, kind of starting over and installing. Well, you actually wouldn't require installing and starting over, really, because all you'd have to do is install OS X on that external drive. Is it a USB drive or a FireWire drive?
It's a. It looks like a USB drive,
yeah,
but
it needs to be a FireWire drive.
2.0. Okay.
It could be a USB drive. If you had a FireWire drive, you can boot from it.
Okay.
So what you would do is you'd install OS X on it, and then when you start up the machine, you hold down the Option key, and it'll look for all the different places it can boot from. One of them will be the external drive. You say, "Yeah, boot from that." That drive can be faster than the Mac. The drive in the iMac is a laptop drive. It's a slower 5,400 RPM drive. So by putting, especially for what you're doing, by putting a faster 7,200 RPM drive as your boot drive, even though it's external, it will be faster.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realize one of those could be the beginning drive.
Yeah, all of this, unfortunately, is going to require you to start over. You're going to have to back up and reinstall. If you haven't gone too far down the road on that, that's not the end of the world, but it is something that you're going to have to do before you do all this. But that's probably a good idea. If you're going to use heavy-duty applications like Final Cut, stuff that disk speed is important, you might even want to get ready for this. Two FireWire external drives. Because when you're doing video editing, it's always a good idea to do that on an empty partition, at least, if not an empty drive, because fragmentation will kill you on digitizing video. So most video editors keep a separate drive that they never use except for the project they're currently working on, and then they wipe it clean each time, backing up. I even know people, because hard drives are so cheap, in a production business, I know people who will take the drive when they're done with it, instead of wiping it, wrap it up in bubble wrap, put it in a closet. Alex Lindsay does this. Put it in a closet and buy a new drive. Because it's not that, it's $100, $150, and then you've got a perfect backup of your project. Clever, eh? Rebecca Baker, my producer, coming up with a great website for you. More of your calls, too. I am Leo Laborde, the Tech Guy. Carbonite, automatic, secure computer backup over the internet. Carbonite.com. I am Leo Laborde, the tech guy from the beautiful Tech Guy Labs. I don't know what's going on here. We've pulled Rebecca Baker off the phones. That means no calls can come in because she is going to pick a site for us. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Our fabulous producer. Good to talk to you. How are things going in the pit?
Yeah, that's what we
call it. Phone pit.
You should see us via webcam here, what we do.
Yeah, when are you going to do that? When are you going to stream video of the web pit, of the phone
pit? Oh, you're never going to see it.
Now, Rebecca is a surfer extraordinaire, always finds interesting, unusual sites. You got a site for us this week?
I do. And this is a site that I normally wouldn't be into, except for the IT guys at work told me about it.
Oh.
And I have a soft spot for IT. It's called Zillow.com.
Oh,
and you've probably heard
Zillow.
Of it. Yes.
Z-I-L-L-O-W. Like pillow with a Z.
Uh-huh. Time Magazine once nominated it as one of their favorite sites, so you know it's good. Basically, what it allows you to do is search for homes and property values. And it sounds, boring real estate, but it's really neat. They utilize that satellite imaging, so you can zoom in on a home and find out basically what they call the Zestimate, the estimate for what its value is, but that's their kind of play on words with the Zs.
Oh, excuse me, I'm typing in my address.
Okay.
I want to know how much my house is worth.
So, yeah.
And does this give you a pretty accurate...
Yeah, I think so. I think it's pretty on the up and up. It's the same guys who brought us Expedia.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I know what they're doing.
They do. So you can search for your home. You can search for your neighbor's home. You can search for a neighborhood that you might want to live in. You can find homes for sale or recently sold homes.
Ooh, I've made money on my home.
Oh, hey.
Well, not a lot, but a little bit. So this is, if I were going to sell it, you think this would be a pretty close to, you know, what's fun is you can also look at what your neighbor's homes. Oh my goodness.
Right.
Wait
and you can say,
minute.
Hey, why is their home worth that much?
Yeah.
And mine's not.
Oh, all of their homes have gone down in value. Wow. That's interesting.
Mm.
Mm. Oh, this is fun. This is really the worst kind of snooping.
I like it a lot. They've got sections on the website, like a real estate guide, where they kind of tell you, you know, the ins and the outs of the real estate market with like a wiki-style interface.
Oh, man, I can't believe it. The house next door to us is sold at the same time for the same price is worth $100,000 more than my house.
What?
I'm mad.
That's a travesty.
A travesty. This is fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Have you done this with your neighborhood?
I have. I typed in my parents' house and saw what it was worth. I typed in some very pricey homes down there in Orange County, California. Checked those out. Stuff that I will probably never acquire.
I should warn you. I think it was a Wall Street Journal recently did a survey. Maybe it was the Times of Zillow prices. And they found it was very accurate in the mid-range, but it could be wildly inaccurate on the very, very expensive homes and the very, very inexpensive homes. And they think it's partly because of a lack of information on them. For instance, they gave as an example a home that Zillow said was worth $500,000, which is just had sold for $2 million. And the reason is Zillow didn't know it was in a gated community. So it's little things like that.
Okay.
And you can, when you look at your home, if you think that the value is wrong, you can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, I have more bedrooms.
They have a thing called MyZillow, and it's free. You can sign up for it, and it allows you to claim your home. And then edit your home facts.
My home has gone down $10,000 in the last 30 days.
Right. Can you edit the value of the home?
Yeah, I want to change
just put
that.
My home's worth, $500 billion.
I want to change that. This is a really, you know what I love about this? This is what, to me, the internet and technology is all about, is giving people information.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, I mean, they've got a bird's eye view of my house. Why? That's my car. Wait a minute. That's my car in the driveway.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, but it's so cool.
Who's that in my backyard? Oh my goodness. This is fun. It is cool. You can really get it better than a Google Earth picture. This is a pretty good picture of my house.
Wow.
Wow.
And then one last thing that's really cool about this website is that you can look for cool homes, like famous TV homes, famous unique homes, famous scary homes.
What's a famous scary home? Bela Lugosi's house?
I guess.
The Winchester right. Mystery House? How funny.
That's one for sure.
Famous scary homes in Transylvania. I love it. Zillow, Zillow.com. You might think it's an invasion of privacy or... You might think it's a really useful way to find out if the realtor is asking too much money for that house you want to buy. Thank you, Rebecca Baker.
You're welcome, Leo.
Let's get back. She's back to the phones with you. Let's get back to the phone calls here. 8888 ask Leo's a phone number, and on the line from Oceanside, California, Jack. Hey, Jack, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, this is Action Jack from Oceanside.
Action Jack! The motivational speaker and self-published author.
You are correct.
You are correct, good, sir.
Great memory.
Oh, yeah. Well, how many Action Jacks do I know?
I don't know. But first, before my question, I have a riddle.
Okay.
Why is it unwise to compare Macs to PCs?
If it's going to be something like apples to oranges, apples to what?
What? Because everyone knows you can't compare apples to lemons.
Lemons! I got the fruit. I like it, Jack.
Just a joke.
It's just a joke. We've got more Windows computers in the Leoville Labs than we do Macs, I think. Or no, it's even. We've got three Windows PCs and three Macs.
I know you bend over backwards to be fair and balanced. So
I do, like Fox News.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I heard you on the iPhone show with Scott Boren.
Oh, yeah.
I think you disappointed him just a little bit by trying to bend over backwards to be fair.
Yeah, he does a show called the Apple Phone Show at ApplePhoneShow.com, and it's obviously a show for people who like the Apple phone a lot. And he wanted to know my opinion, so I wasn't even bending over backwards. I was being honest, and I think there are pros and cons.
All right, but good answer.
Good.
All right, now I have a question about my MacBook.
Okay.
And I don't know. I haven't accessed Wi-Fi. When I do, I have troubles when I go to Starbucks or something.
Right.
I want to know about accessing Wi-Fi and broadband access for the MacBook.
Well, it should be pretty straightforward. I mean, I use my MacBook all the time with Starbucks. In fact, I have a T-Mobile account that I use to access it, internet and airports and everywhere. What happens is you just, you have that little triangle on the menu bar. That's your airport strength signal. If you're getting three or more bands, you should have no trouble. You pull it down and make sure it's selected for T-Mobile, because that's what Starbucks uses. And then you'll open a browser, and then the browser will say, okay, how you want to pay? So do you not, where does it fail? Do you not see the bars? Well,
no, that's it. I didn't know. I mean, I have to pay for it?
Oh, yeah. at Starbucks, you do. At Starbucks, you have to pay, but at many coffee shops, they offer free Wi-Fi. Just because it's Wi-Fi, I don't mean it's free.
Okay, what about on the iPhone, that Wi-Fi, is that free? Or it depends on where I'm at?
Same thing. It's just another computer, so it depends totally on where you're at, exactly.
Now, on using my MacBook, if I want to access it broadband, how do I do that?
You mean like at home with a cable modem or a DSL modem?
Well, if I'm on the road, can I use it?
You mean those little Sprint or Verizon broadband cards?
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have a PC card, so you need to use, and this is what I do, you need to get the USB version of it. Sprint and Verizon, and I bet you AT&T, although I haven't checked, offer USB versions of these high-speed internet cards. What you're using, by the way, is the 3G third-generation cell phone network. It's not everywhere in the country, but in many metropolitan areas, Sprint and Verizon both offer something called EVDO Revision A, which is very fast. As fast as 1.5 megabits down, which is probably close to your speed at home, 300 megabits up, I'm sorry, kilobits up, again, close to or maybe even better, in many cases better than your home up speed. Of course, your mileage may vary depending on how many other people in the area are using it and how close you are to the source and all of that. But I've found it works very well. Shuby's using it right now in the Tech Guy Labs. You're using Sprint. It's working fine. I use Verizon. Haven't yet tried the AT&T, but if you're, and that'll be a more limited area. As we said, we were talking about this the other day. HSDPA, which is the high-speed internet that AT&T uses, is not as widely available. But all three cases, you'd get the USB version. And frankly, I think that's the best way to do it anyway. The one thing you give up is kind of the relatively smoother form factor of inserting a card, whether it's an express card or a PC card into your computer. But, you always have that little big honking antenna sticking out anyway, which is easy to snap off. So I don't think that that's so cool. If you buy a laptop, and many Windows laptops come this way, automatically supporting it, you still have to subscribe, but the antenna is built in. That's slick.
But it's limited to that laptop. I like the idea of buying the USB. Then if your broadband at home goes down, you just plug it in. It's kind of slick on a Mac. It just recognizes it. You don't even need any software. The Mac just says, oh, you're using a broadband card. Okay. Does that work that way with a Sprint? I know it does with the Verizon. Do you have to? On the PC, yeah, first you have to activate it on the PC, but you can get the store that you buy it from to activate it for you. Once it's activated, you just plug it in, and the drivers are already on the Mac. On the Windows side, you have to install some drivers. I think it works very well. I think it's a very good solution. It's expensive. It's around $60 a month. But if you travel a lot, it might be more economical to do that than to buy broadband at home and subscribe to something like T-Mobile Hotspot Access on the road. Because a T-Mobile Hotspot, even if you're a T-Mobile customer, that's $20. And if you're spending $30 or $40 on broadband at home, it might be more economical just to use the Verizon or Sprint or AT&T card. Now, there's one extra thing. And again, I mentioned this yesterday, and I heard some interesting feedback from a variety of folks in the chat room and an email. Verizon, at least, it says we're going to limit you to 5 gigabytes a month download. They say any more than that, you must be doing something illegal. AT&T does the same. Some say Sprint does not, although I've been told they do. If you'll read the very, very finest, teeny weeniest print somewhere in there, there is a limit. But in all three cases, they don't necessarily enforce it. So that's the interesting twist. It just gives them an out, but whether they'll enforce it or not, I don't know. We saw these kinds of limits with many internet service providers, with satellite service. And frankly, I don't understand it. Nowadays, you can blow through 5 gigs in a month. In a day, you can blow through 5 gigs. More of your calls coming up. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The tech guy. Well, we've got our Frapper map set up. Thank you, Shubby. That was fast work. Frapper's a kind of an interesting service. It's one of those Web 2.0 services. It's been around about a year. FRAPPR.com. If you go to FRAPPR.com/the tech guy, you can put a pin in the map where you are. We'll see how quickly we can break Frapper. Did this with my podcast network about a year ago. We got 20,000 pins in the map before the thing just collapsed. They just gave up trying to load it. I think we changed the Frapper code so that they would only load a little bit at a time. After a while, they figured out, this isn't working. People aren't willing to sit here for 3 hours while the map loads 20,000 pins. Mike in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Leo. First, I want to thank you, without mentioning your sponsor's name, for the DSL internet connectivity. Compared to my old internet service provider, the amount that you have advertised is less than one-third per month, and I just want to thank you so much.
You're talking about DSL Extreme. It's $12.95. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The independent DSL providers are limited by the phone company as to what they can do.
Oh.
Because they essentially are buying the connectivity from the phone company. The incumbent local carrier, the guy who owns the copper to your house, has to provision the DSL. But because it's an open market, this is, by the way, what Google wants the FCC to do with the 700 megahertz spectrum, allow people like DSL Extreme and other companies like, who are some of the Earthlink and others, to come along and say, okay, we're going to put a switch in, and the phone company has to let them do this. We'll put a switch in your central office. You'll provide the copper to the subscriber's house, but we'll be the internet service provider, not you. Now, remember, if you're a SBC customer, I guess it's now AT&T customer, they have a deal with another company for an internet service provider. So they have their own. They're competing. In effect, they're competing with these other DSL companies. And so there's always been a kind of a difficult relationship between the two. You may notice, for instance, when you want to switch from the phone company's DSL to another provider, they seem to take a really long time.
Yes, it does. I was on. It took 1 week.
Well, that's not bad. It used to take many weeks.
Oh, And this I thought one week was bad.
Yeah, well, one week without internet these days is a long time.
Yes.
I don't know if there's a statutory limit to what they can do, or if it's... If it's coming from... I'm not sure how it works out. If the FCC or their statutes say it has to be done a certain amount of time. Whatever their limit is, I'm sure they go right to the last minute. Anyway, what can
I do for you? First, I wanted to thank you for that information because it was very valuable to me. But I have a different question, and it may be because I wasn't listening carefully. I thought maybe I was listening clearly, but maybe I wasn't. I thought that you were comparing DLP and LCD, and I thought you also mentioned something called LCOS.
Boy, you're a good listener.
What is that?
So DLP is kind of in a field of its own. So let's talk first about LCD and LCOS. They're very similar. You know about LCD already. If you've got a laptop or a flat panel screen on your computer, that's LCD, liquid crystal display.
Okay.
And I'm going to really simplify here, and all the TV engineers are going to be mad at me. The simple description of how this works is, there is a fluorescent light in your screen. The liquid crystals basically are shutters to the fluorescent lights that turn on and off on command from the computer.
Okay.
LCOS is liquid crystal on silicon.
Oh.
Roughly the same. It looks the same. But it has some advantages. It doesn't have, for instance, that what they call that screen door effect.
Okay.
LCD does. You notice you can see actually lines between the pixels on an LCD screen. Those are much less visible on LCOS screens. Now, this third kind is DLP. And this is just the wackiest Rube Goldberg thing you ever heard of. Basically, it's a chip with millions of little tiny mirrors that flip on or off in synchrony. And that's how they draw the screen. They're reflecting light instead of passing it through. It's reflective, not transmittive. And then they bounce it off in the old style through a rainbow-colored color wheel. So they would now have, now this is even more Rube Goldberg, they'd have to flip in synchronization with this rotating color wheel. So when the red was on top of them, they'd flip on if they're red. Anyway, it's very complicated. If you go to howstuffworks.com, you can get descriptions of how all three of these technologies work. Now the new DLPs don't have the color wheels anymore, which actually has improved, I think, the picture. But these are all three ways of generating digital images, either direct view in the case of LCOS and LCD, or rear projected, which is LCOS, LCD, or DLP. All three of those can be used in rear projected.
Can you recommend an LCOS, like two or three manufacturers, so that you're not showing favoritism to just one?
Well, I don't mind showing favoritism. That's my job. There are really only two companies, maybe three, that are using LCOS right now. Sony does not use it. Who uses it? JVC's the one I like, D-I-L-A.
Okay.
They're really the best LCOS. Who's using it? Is it Samsung's using LCOS? Now I've forgotten this. It is Sony, isn't it? Yeah, it is Sony. I can never remember. Sony never wanted to do DLP, so they only did LCD, and then finally LCOS came along, and that's kind of a hybrid between the two, and they said, oh, we like LCOS. So the XBRs use LCOS from Sony. Those are very good. My favorite is the JVC DILA. If you want big screens, you get a bigger screen for your money by getting a rear projector set. See, a direct view set like plasma or LCD or LCOS, where you're looking right at the screen. Actually, I don't think you can get big screen LCOS. That's not. LCOS is only rear projection. So the LCD or plasma are direct view, like your computer screen. They're more expensive per square inch than a rear projection, because a rear projection blows it up a little bit. So it's cheaper to get a rear projection screen. And I think DLP and LCOS are both very good. Frankly, right now I'm an LCOS fan on rear projection.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the information that you provide.
Well, it's my pleasure. And we talk about this all the time with our friend Scott Wilkinson, who is a TV expert. And he'll be back next week to talk more about this. So please tune in. Leo LaPorte here. More of your calls coming up. I am the Tech Guy. We'll be right back. day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking about high tech today, and I mean high tech, not just, it's not a computer show. I'll let the other guys do the computer shows. This is everything. Everything from cell phones to camcorders, digital cameras. Yeah, we talk about computers, of course. But those are all computers, really, aren't they? Nowadays, see, that's what's changed in 20 years. When I first started doing this, it was a computer show because that was, you know, that's the computer was it. I remember my, while I was doing that show, getting my first black and white laptop with a super twist screen. Ooh, that made it very bright. But then, of course, computers migrated. They didn't want to be stuck in their little beige boxes. Now they're everywhere. They're in your cars, in your cell phones. They're even in our TVs. An HD DVD player or a Blu-ray player, that's a computer. That's a heavy-duty computer. Actually, it's one of the complaints people have about the early high-def DVD players is they take a minute or two to start up because they're booting up. They actually have to, they don't show you a boot up screen. They're not crazy, but that's what's going on. It's a computer. So really, computers are everywhere. And my wristwatch now has a computer in it. It's not a crystal anymore. It's a computer because it's calling the atomic clock and downloading the time and setting the dial. So that's what we talk about on this show, the amazing changes before us. And boy, are they happening fast. It's just, I can't even keep up. It's just unbelievable what's going on. So if you want to know more about it, if you'd like to understand it a little bit better, why don't you give me a ring, 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. Did you see that? You do, Shuby, you do text messages. Shuby's America's favorite high school junior. He keeps my show notes. How many text messages a month do you send? 10? 100? 800 a month. That's not bad. That's not bad. That's what, that's no more than 20 a day. No, 25 a day. 30 a day. Take weekends off. But that's not bad. And nowadays, kids, and I say, not kids, anybody under 30 is doing that a lot, and you'll see them texting all the time. Remember on the office, she's texting Jim, right? Yeah. And everybody knows what she's doing. She's, you know, it doesn't look like she's playing a game on her phone. You don't, when you see somebody fiddling around with their phone, you don't think they're watching TV or they're playing a game. They're listening to music. You know what they're doing? They're texting. So, you know, that's, I would say kids nowadays, I have a text message plan. I think it costs $10 for $1,500 a month. That should be enough. You got unlimited? Shuby's got unlimited. He's prepared. If he ever meets a girl, he's ready. I'm just kidding. Just teasing. Get this. A Polish bus driver has been fired for sending 38,000 text
messages. Are you making serious investment mistakes that can hurt your portfolio?
He did it on his company cell phone. 38,000 text messages.
You'll find out when you read Forbes columnist Ken Fisher's exclusive report called "The
I think $34,000. He was he spent 94,000 zlotys.
Biggest
he was trying to win a contest for 100,000
zlotys. And how to
zlotys.
Avoid them. Hi.
So he would have made a few bucks if he'd won this thing. But it wasn't his money, right? He spent $34,000 in text messages.
Andrew Tufel, Director
means,
of Research
at
Fisher Investments.
For the
a multi-billion dollar money management firm.
That's like 50 cents a text message. No, you know, 30 cents a text message. That's ridiculous. The bus drive, 86 cents?
I'm serving affluent individuals.
Shuby's fast.
Now, Ken Fisher
the
and
bus
I want
driver,
to help you guard against
oh yeah, 2.4 zlotys per text message. So he must have got a discount. The bus driver is supposed to be limited
to so many people.
$5
to request
a day
your free copy of the eight
messages.
Biggest.
I'm sorry, $5 a month. He'd never make
investors
it.
Make.
He'd never
and
make
how
it
to
in this
avoid
country.
Them.
That's
just click
like
on the button below and fill out the short
eight
form.
Text, that's ridiculous. He says he wanted to buy a second car with his possible winnings. Now he says I'm without work.
You may learn how to
just
avoid
a little
making
word
investment mistakes
careful
before trouble starts. This is a limited time offer. So,
you know, if especially kids, because they don't know. My son did not know that he got billed for those. 1 year, 1 month, we had a little sit down talk. Son, what, Dad? It's time for the talk. Oh, you know about text messaging? What's that, Dad? Well, it costs your father money, lots of it, and you just ran up a bill like ringtones. He buys ringtones, games, the whole thing. By the way, if you're worried about cell towers, an article in New Science magazine just came out. Well, that was funded by the British government. We could trust the British government, right? They say mobile towers are not harmful to human health. Lead researcher Elaine Fox is a psychologist. I don't know how she got this gig. You'd think you'd want somebody who knows about, you know, like a biologist. She's a psychologist at the University of Essex. She says, short-term exposure to signals from mobile phone towers is not related to levels of well-being or physical symptoms in these individuals. So don't worry about it. It's okay. She said, this is funny, though. Some people dropped out of the study because they felt sick. They felt sick. They weren't sick. They felt sick. That's unfortunate, but I don't think it undermines the study, she said. We do know there's a large scientific literature that shows if people believe something will do them harm or benefit them, this can cause real biological effects due to the placebo effect. So, bottom line, if you think you're going to get sick, you do get sick. So that's why word goes out from this day forward, it's not going to make you sick. Unless you think it is. In which case it will. So I don't get it. 1 in 5 adults watch web videos. Did you see that? That's kind of surprising, but I think, it's not 1 in 5 adults. It's 1 in 5 people under like 30. Well, if you include my wife, maybe because she's bringing the average up for us older folks. There's a Saturday Night Live video. Yeah, you know which one it is. It's the one that was censored on Saturday Night Live, but she will watch that over and over and over again. I don't know what she just loves that. 1 in 5 online Americans, so this is narrowed down to just people who get online, will view video on the internet on any given day. Young adults in greater numbers, of course. They often turn to humorous clips. All age groups use videos. All other age groups, the older age groups, use it for news primarily. Good news for YouTube. Remember when everybody said, Google, you're crazy. You spent $1.6 billion on YouTube. Maybe crazy like a fox. Half of video viewers ages 18 to 29, half watch videos on YouTube. About 15% MySpace, only 7% turn to a cable or network TV site. That's a little scary if you're CBS or NBC or Fox, because they're not going to you, they're going to YouTube. Those in the 18 to 29 age group are also more likely to have paid for video access at some point. But it's still a small number, only about 10%. So we're seeing younger people buy video more, but it's still a minority. Most people just go to the free sites like YouTube. 8888, Ask Leo. We're talking about blogs earlier on. Coming up, Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru with a great gadget. Maybe you've got a video recommendation. Love to hear from you. Let's go to Craig in Hamilton, Ontario, obviously listening on the internet. Hello, Craig.
Hey, Leo.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful.
Been watching you on the camera there this afternoon.
Did you see me bouncing?
I think you should put that little singing bit on air.
You want me to play that?
Yeah.
It's so horrible. I would lose, not only would I lose listeners, I think I'd lose stations. It's that bad.
Probably. Well, I don't know. It's not.
I was singing, I guess it was after the show yesterday or something, and somebody caught it. Because, you know, we do this streaming video of the show, behind the scenes of the show, and somebody caught it and put it to music. I'll play a little bit of it. Paul Minshall's really good. He does a lot of our music. There's cats yowling all over the country right now.
Well, you're better than William Shatner.
but only marginally. What can I do for you?
Leo, I have a question about a video capture card. just let me give you a little bit of background here. I have a Pentium 4 computer, just a, you know, run-of-the-mill machine, 1 gig of RAM, Windows XP Home. I have a FireWire card for capturing digital video. And I went out and bought a Pinnacle analog capture card from Pinnacle Studios.
Okay.
It's an ABDV card.
Yeah, those are pretty good.
It works great, you know, it does a great job. But when I install it in my computer, it works fine, it captures fine, and everything's fine. But it, for some reason, when it's installed, my internet speed seems to drop.
What?
Considerably, actually. Like,
okay, well,
when
clearly,
I'm normally
clearly
getting
it's not connected to the internet, so it's your computer that's slowing down, right?
Yeah, but here's the twist. If I boot to Windows Vista, the problem disappears. So, and if I install the card
now,
on another machine...
Now, if you said the other direction, I'd believe it.
Yeah, I know.
Because Vista has all of this copy protection stuff in it, but you're saying it slows it down with XP, but not with Vista.
That's right. Now,
well, there's one,
if I install it in another computer with Windows XP, it's fine.
So it's just that computer with XP. Well, that computer probably has... It's either a driver issue. You understand what's happening is that when you're capturing video, a lot of bandwidth's being consumed. So it's either a driver, a bad driver, or conflict with another program. That's a tough thing to try to do. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Just talking in the chat room. Nobody has any obvious suggestions for this last caller with the Pinnacle. It's got to be that there's some hardware, either a hardware issue. I guess the Pinnacle could be slowing the computer down when it's working. I don't see why that would be. But it's clearly not just that the internet is slowed down, right? I don't know. That's a interest. Maybe it's an IRQ conflict. That's what MZ's suggesting in the chat room. You know, it's been a long time since we've had an IRQ conflict, but it could very well be that. That would actually explain why Vista's not having a problem. Maybe Vista handles these conflicts better and why other machines aren't. One way to maybe, if it is an IRQ issue, believe it or not, take that Pinnacle card and put it in a different slot. I didn't ask him if it was an internal or external, but I'm going to presume it's an internal card. I think he said it was. Put it in a different slot. Believe it or not, sometimes that will change. It'll change the IRQ required and may fix that problem. Remember, we used to have that problem all the time. You wouldn't remember that, Shubby. It was before you were born. But we used to have that problem all the time with Windows. Christina's in Murrieta, California. Hi, Christina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a comment and a two-part question.
Okay.
For the guy with the TVs, we have an LCOS, a 60-inch Sony, and we love it.
SXRD. I said the wrong thing. It's an SXRD. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love it. Yeah, and it looks really good with Blu-ray. So,
doesn't it? I'll tell you, almost if you have a good HD TV and a good HD player, whether it's HD DVD or Blu-ray, boy, that's spectacular. I was watching The Matrix the other night on HD, and boy, did that look good.
We just watched Blood Diamond last night, and it was excellent.
Oh.
So, highly recommend it.
That's a Blu-ray only, unfortunately.
We also have the LCD but of a Sony, a 40-inch, mm-hmm. but the 60-inch, the SXRD is where it's at.
You like it better
really
than
good.
The LCD.
Oh, yeah, really good. Okay, so my question is regarding the MacBook Pro,
okay.
the big one, the new one,
yep.
and migrating my PC to the Parallels. And I want to know how easy is that? It says, I read on the website, that you can just migrate your entire PC to the Parallels, and they make it look like it's, you know, click and drag. And I'm just wondering if you have any experience with that. And then also my second question is, if there's a program that doesn't work on Bootcamp, will it also not work on Parallels?
Do you know why it doesn't work on Bootcamp?
No, they just said that they couldn't get it to work. I don't understand why. Or my company doesn't support Macs, but they bought it for me, and they said, you're on your own. So I'm kind of like,
I don't see why it wouldn't work on Bootcamp. But the only thing that's different, mm-hmm. basically, it's a PC when it's running in Bootcamp. You've partitioned the drive.
Right.
You put Windows on there. The only thing that's different is it may have a driver conflict. It may not be compatible with a video driver that or whatever. But they're standard Windows drivers. this program, if it doesn't work on, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is if it doesn't work on boot camp, it must not work on some PCs as well. It must be very finicky about what it works on. The other difference is the EFI, but I don't think that that's going to make it. How it boots doesn't make any difference.
Okay. Yeah,
so it should work.
Yeah, that's what I talked to another guy, a Mac guy, and he said, yeah, it should work on both.
A lot of IT guys who don't know Macs, don't like Macs, don't support Macs, will just make assumptions like that.
Exactly.
No, it's not going to work.
Okay.
It should work. It is, for all intents and purposes, it's a Windows machine. If it doesn't work, it's because there's a driver conflict, and there must be other PCs it doesn't work on. Now, about the migration, you could actually do it, make an image of your PC hard drive and migrate it over. I wouldn't recommend it, though. In general, I don't recommend it even if you're going from PC to PC. You gain benefits by installing Windows fresh and reinstalling the applications. And unless you have a very elaborate system, I probably wouldn't do a migration. You can.
Okay. So you're saying install Parallels, then install Windows, and then install all my Windows programs through Windows on Parallels.
Yeah, I mean, Parallels has, if you get the new version of Parallels Desktop 3, it has a thing called Transporter, which is designed to do exactly that. But I just, in my experience, you often bring problems over with you, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So if you've got the time, I would just, if you got the time, I would do it from scratch. But yes, Transporter is designed to do that.
Okay, cool. Okay. Very helpful.
Thank you, Leo. Yeah, you tell those mean old IT guys, it's okay. Now, I have to say, it's not uncommon for software that is in a vertical market, which is probably what she's talking about. Software that's designed for a narrow niche. You know, paper hangers or, you know, a wallpaper calculator. Something that's got a limited market often isn't very well written. Might be written in a programming language, an odd programming language, might have dependencies that would make it unreliable. And in that case, it might be less reliable because of the drive. I don't know. I mean, it's not. When you're running boot camp on a Mac, you're running Windows. Now, interestingly, it may run better in Parallels. And because you're doing different drivers, Parallels, which is virtualization software, which creates a virtual Windows environment within the Macintosh, so you could switch back and forth without rebooting. Parallels may actually work better because it's using such generic drivers. It's using a generic video driver, generic internet, you know, Ethernet driver, generic sound driver. So if you have a compatibility issue in boot camp, you may not actually, believe it or not, in Parallels. It's more vanilla. It's more of a kind of traditional Windows environment. Either way, I don't know of anything that will run on a Windows machine that you can't get running on a Mac either using boot camp or Parallels. I don't know what that could be unless it's a hardware case. Coming up, our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, and more of your calls. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
The Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 get net or visit them online at dslextreme.com.
Just listen to those guys. So great. Bare Naked Ladies, right? From Canada. Don't you know, Shibby? You're supposed to be hip and young and with it. What I love about them is that they are big into getting their music out there without copy protection. They sell their music in Canada without copy protection. In fact, they're one of a number of artists that do that. They can't do it, ironically, on the iTunes Music Store, even though Steve Jobs supposedly is against copy protection. I guess they're not letting individual artists decide that. Or maybe it's the label. I don't know. Hey, let's talk gadgets. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and on the line with me, the gadget guru, Mr. Ron Rosberg, who is actually in a kayak right now in Willie McCovey Harbor, waiting for Barry Bonds to hit a home run.
Actually, I'm in a kayak, but I'm up in Clear Lake. And if he will hit, it's going to be about a 50,000-foot home run.
you might do it.
I might catch it here.
Now, right how come? Wait a minute. You're not in town on this, the most auspicious of weeks, where Barry could actually tie Hank Aaron's home run record.
Is that terrible, Leo?
You've really given up on the Giants.
Remember listening to Ron Owens about 2 years ago when I was in the bathroom when he hit his 700?
Yeah. What did Ron say?
Just me and the guy putting the paper towels in the dispenser.
Well, Barry's going to miss you, but do you think he's going to do it this week?
No, I don't think he's going to do it today. Except last night, the Willis, the pitcher, grew up in Alameda or across the bay there. He
didn't walk him.
He fired some fastballs down and he struck him out one time. So I think he pitched to him, Leo.
Welcome to Baseball Talk with
right. Hey, anyway, by the way, you were talking earlier about elk costs. I just want to give my 2 cents worth here. I've had a JVC 70 inch. This is my third elk cost, and I've had this for 2 years, Leo. It's a 1080i. It's not a 1080p, but I'll tell you, I love it. I love the elk cost. It's so inexpensive. You could buy a 70 inch, for $3,000 or whatever. And if you want the 70 inch plasma, I saw one the other day, and it's only $50,000 to $70,000. So
yeah, you like those Vizios for the direct views plasmas, right?
I have a Vizio in there now. I've got three sets in my family room, but the one I use the mostly is the JVC elk cost. Great picture and just a great price. And because most people, if you have the space, I've got to sit back 26 feet anyway to where I sit and watch it. So I have plenty of room, so I don't need it hanging on the wall.
But it's nice to have a big screen if you're going to sit that far back. You kind of need it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk today about some gadgets here. I'm going to tell you about one that I've been using again for about a couple years. It's a weather station. Because I really, up here at Clear Lake, I really want to know the weather. And I want to know last year, this year, and stuff like that, and how hot it is outside. For example, right now, I'm looking right here at a wireless console on my table, Leo, and it's 84 degrees outside here in beautiful Clear Lake. It's 75 inside. And I've got the wind at 6 miles an hour. And it's terrific. This thing will go, I think, about 1,500 feet away if you have to go that far. I have it out on my dock. And it's made by Davis. It's called the Vantage Pro 2. And it is, I really did some searching to find some weather stations. And Davis was a little bit more expensive. It retails for $595.
Yikes. I'm just going to stick my head out the window with my hair wet. I'll know all about.
Yeah, you could do that. You could buy a swimming pool thermometer and do that the same thing I do occasionally, too. But
people love weather, though. In fact, that's one of the most popular little doohickeys to put, little widgets to put on your desktop as a weather widget.
I wanted to also link this to my clearlake.org website. That was my whole intention, but I need you to come up here and do that for me.
I'll hook it up for you. So it has a connection that you could somehow get into the internet?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, you could do it. And
do you have at clearlake.org is Ron's resort up there, the Honeymoon Cove Resort.
Might be my last year, Leo, as I said.
You're retiring, huh?
Well, it's tough in the.
Do you have a webcam up there?
No, but I got a lot of webcams. Come on up.
I'm coming up. We're going to set up the weather station and the webcams, so people can look at the lake. I'm just looking at the picture you've got on. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, no, I got a great site up here. I have 5 acres, 500 feet of beachfront, and 5 cabins, like 3 mobile homes.
We should have a little tech guy party up there. Let's have a barbecue and a party up there. All right.
Name the time and date. All right, anyway, getting back to the Davis Vantage Pro 2, I found it online also for like $387 or $388. Thing is, you got to make sure that it includes the console, the wireless console, and the station. It's all set up. All you have to do is put it on a pole, and very easy to set up, and then you're ready to go. But you could, it will pick up. I think it holds like 90 days of weather, and then you just link it to your computer if you get the computer module, which is an extra, $80-$90 or whatever, and then it just downloads that, or actually uploads it to your computer, and you've got this records for year after year. I really like it. They have a comparison sheet. If you go into their site, it's called the Vantage Pro 2 versus the competition against Oregon Scientific Lacrosse. So you could take a look at it.
And you don't have to have a wire going from the remote to the base station?
That's absolutely not. And most of them, Leo, are like 200 or 300 feet. This will give you even longer. Yeah. And then, here's a neat thing, too. If you're in with a bunch of people, like where I am here, I've got four or five homes that are fairly close. They can buy a station and use my use just the console, Leo, and then use my station to get fed the information.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of
so you can have multiple consoles.
Yeah. The next item I want to talk about, I know I've been talking about a lot about wireless phones, but because the iPhone is on everybody's mind, I want to be fair and make sure people know that there's a lot of other phones out there. But one of my emailers had asked me, he's a contractor and he keeps dropping his phone and all that, so he asked me about what I could recommend for a heavy-duty phone, maybe even something waterproof. And so a Casio... for Verizon has made the GZ1. They made it about a year and a half ago. It was a heavy duty phone. It has a big clip on it, so if you want to put it on your belt, you could hook it onto your belt or whatever. It's got great keys. And what the one problem that they did on the first version, it was supposed to be waterproof, but they didn't give you a Bluetooth connection. They gave you just an earphone. Well, the earphone, if you had an earpiece plugged into it and you dropped it in water, basically, you kind of screwed it up with the water going into the earplug.
Yeah.
So I don't think they did a lot of good thinking. But now they've actually made a better cover, a better design cover, which this kind of looks kind of cool. It's got a camera in it. I don't believe it's a very, it's like a two. I don't think it's a two. Might not even be a one, but it's got a camera built
in.
Is
it still the GZ1 or is it the GZ2 now or something?
It's the GZ1S, I think it's called. The GZ1S. I did send you the link for it, which will go right to the right one.
We'll put that on the show notes page.
So yeah, it's got Bluetooth, and it's got a speakerphone in it. It's really, for those who are really abusing phones, you might want to take a look at this. I think the retail on it is...
phone abusers, here's a phone for you.
Right.
Yeah.
It retails for $199. There's a $50 online discount.
You know who I should give this to is my son. Because he skates, you know, he's a skateboarder. I showed him the iPhone. He said, well, what would happen if I landed on it? I said, well, it would break. He said, well, I don't want it then. I want to land on it. So maybe, could he land on the GZ?
Yes, you should probably be able to land on the GZ. It's really a well-built,
that's what I want.
Tough phone. I have it even on there. I may put the word tough in there. The last item, Leo, is, again, you and I really like that Blue Ant speakerphone, which is really cool, but I did come across...
I'm so glad I got that. Don't tell me there's something better, because I'm going to get mad.
No, I'm not going to say this is better, but this is smaller, though, okay, Leo, that if someone just wants to put something in their pocket, this is maybe half the size of some of these cell phones, and it's got a pretty good speaker on it. It's made by Motorola. It's the T305
Bluetooth. So the idea is these aren't hands-free for your sticking in your ear. These are for your car.
Put it on your visor.
So you just get in the car. That's what I liked about the Blue Ant. I mean, I just get in the car and it sees the phone and I'm there.
But if you're changing car, you have three or four different cars and stuff like that. Yeah. This thing here, or you're going on a trip, this is kind of cool. It retails for $79. Amazon, the link we have on there, Leo, that I get to Shubi is for $59 from Amazon. So it's called the Motorola T305 Bluetooth hands-free speaker.
So I suppose I have to buy this now.
No, just use your Blue Ant. You're not taking the Blue Ant from car to car, are you?
No, I leave it all in the same car. So maybe
I'll
give this
Blue
one
Ant,
to
the
my
Blue
wife.
Ant is the best solution on that. This is for someone
Does
I think
it sound
is going to be
good.
I would say you probably have a bigger speaker in the Blue Ant than you do on this one.
Yeah.
The sound quality is good. The only negative on this one, by the way, that some of the reviewers read some of the reviews on it because there are a couple negatives. But the blue light they say at night is rather distracting because it is a real big blue light. But you could take a piece of black tape and cover part of that light up if you want.
So that's something to keep in mind because you're trying to drive with this thing and it's shining a blue light in your eye. That's not good.
No, absolutely. And one last thing on that Casio Verizon phone, one negative that I do want to point out, and I don't know why they did this, but when you plug in your plug to plug it into the phone directly, you could plug it in either way. And that's wrong because it will not put a charge on. If there's an arrow on it, you would think, well, geez, the arrow would be the upside. It's not.
So in other words, you thought you were charging it, and then you weren't.
That's what I did. I charged it all night. I looked at it. I said, wait a second. This didn't take a charge. Then I took the thing out, and anybody who makes an adapter that will go in both ways that does not work properly is wrong.
Well, at least it doesn't break it. I mean, that's what I'd be more worried about.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Hey, thank you, Ron.
I'm going to turn the game on, and we'll see what Mr. Bonds does, everybody has a great Sunday.
It's like I have season tickets to the Giants, and he's not there. On the only weekend that's going to matter in their whole season.
Well, I thought he was going to do it earlier, Leo.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So did the whole world.
I know. Hey, thank you, Ron Rosberg.
Maybe I'll take you to the game and you could see him.
I'd like to go.
We'll go when they come back. How's that?
All right. Take care.
Make it a great day, everybody.
We're going to, I think we're going to go up to Clear Lake and do a little partay. Partay at Ron's place, the Gadget Guru. Everybody gets a cell phone. Everybody. He's got hundreds of them. We'll put the show notes, links to all the products and the pictures and so forth in the show notes. I've been trying to find this GZ one. I can't. But you have a link, right, Shuby? So we're going to put that in the show notes. I've mentioned them before. I probably didn't tell you loud and clear where to go. That's techguylabs.com. You'll find a link there also to our Frapper map. Add yourself to it. We've got listeners now not only all over the country, but all over the world. That's fun. Still looking for somebody to put a pin in Australia, though, or Papua New Guinea. We don't have anybody there yet either. So that's techguylabs.com. You also find a link there to the chat room, and it's a great place to be the kids in the back of the class. 333 people in there. We're a third of the way to 1,000. Also, a link to the video. We've got two cameras on today, and there are 1,500 people watching on Ustream.tv. We've got 884 watching on Stick'em. They don't like the Stick'em as much because it's the back of my head. The back of my head cam. You can see them both if you go to twit.tv/live. But to turn off the audio, you'll get very confused. All right, we're going to be back with more of your calls in just a bit. Leo LaPorte here. I am the Tech Guy. Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo's a number. They're begging me in the chat room to buy an iMac. Because there is, for no apparent reason, there is this notion floating around that when I buy something, that means it's going to be discontinued tomorrow and the new one will come out. And so everybody kind of waits to see. And okay, it's happened. I admit there's some basis in this. I bought the Apple Macintosh Cube the day it was discontinued. I was in the store buying it. Then I went home and heard on the news that as I got home that that was the last day they'd be selling them. Most recently, I bought a Canon 5D camera. And then 3 days later, Canon announced the Mark II. Come to think of it, this does happen a lot. But I'm not in the market to buy an iMac. Sometimes, you know, like when I bought the iPhone the day it came out, I'm okay. Bought a MacBook the day it came out, I was okay. Oh, of course, I did buy a Dell M1210 laptop. They replaced it with a 1310 within a month. So there you go. Maybe I should make everybody happy. Diane's on the line from San Francisco, listening on the great KGO. Hello, Diane.
Hi there, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling.
I'm a long-time Mac user. I have a nodding acquaintance with Windows and PCs. And a friend has asked me to help her buy a new PC laptop. She's not a very sophisticated user, and she's probably going to keep this thing for the next 10 years, knowing her.
And just out of curiosity, I'm sure you've tried to talk her into a Mac. Is there a reason why she's not buying a Mac?
Well, actually, she tried to talk me into talking her into getting a Mac, but she's surrounded by... Oh, yeah, she's in Cincinnati.
Ah, so you wouldn't be supporting her if she's got Windows users.
No, she's totally surrounded by...
I just wish, you know, I mean, she's not going to have the same issues with security. When novice users buy Windows, it makes me quail. But if she's convinced that she wants a Windows machine, all right, I'll help her. But I just, you know...
Well, I mean, she's got Windows now. She's using Windows 2000... you know, but her laptop's dying. She does live in Cincinnati, and I'm
she's
going to
familiar
be
with Windows. That's okay. I mean, it's all right.
I kind of, because she won't be supported. I mean, just
right.
Nobody does Mac speak there, so
right.
Around her.
Right.
And I'm only going to be there for a week, so I don't have a lot of time to make this happen. My thought was to get a laptop that's already set up as a dual boot volume. With Windows XP on one side and the this is not a bad idea.
Well,
what would you?
Why? Cut the cord and just get Vista is my suggestion.
Really?
Yeah, you really want to go through all that of having a dual boot XP? She's not going to boot into XP, or she's not going to boot into Vista. But
no,
She'll pick one and stick with it.
But about 5 years down the line, isn't Vista going to be...
Yeah, and at that point, you'll want to format the drive and put Vista on it anyway the next time you visit Cincinnati.
Oh, I see. So
you really don't... I would say probably she should go with Vista. It's much more secure than XP is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it's ready for prime time?
It is. I mean, of course it is. For new machines, it's fine. The only issue would be if she had a lot of old hardware that might not be compatible, like old scanners or printers. Although that's becoming less of a problem, unless it's really old. Most of these people are updating their drivers. And then some software will not work. Is she using some unusual software that she needs to get working?
No, very vanilla, basic.
Yeah, she's a novice user. Get her Vista.
Huh,
don't
really?
don't even bother with XP. When you have trouble with Vista, it's because you've got an old scanner you want to get working, or you've got this old program that doesn't work with Vista, or you play games. I frankly think that Vista is a better choice for a novice.
Wow, boy, that's an eye opener. And I would assume anything we get would already be properly supplied, like it'll have maybe 2 gigs of RAM or whatever.
Not necessarily.
No.
Yeah, you want to make sure it's got 2 gigs. Absolutely. Yeah, you can get by with one, but 2 would be a little snappier. And if you say she's going to keep it for 10 years, you might as well get 2.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to make sure. You know, you're going to get a laptop. I would look at Dell. I would look at Lenovo. That's more business-focused, but they make very nice Vista laptops. They still make XP laptops, both of them, so Dell and Lenovo, so you could put XP on there. I just think that dual boot is kind of crazy for a novice user. It's going to take up extra drive space.
Yeah.
Go, you know, she's going to get a new computer. Get her Vista.
Okay.
Dell, Lenovo, I think Fuji makes some nice laptops. Fujitsu makes some nice laptops. It's a short list. I'm not crazy about the HPs. I'm not crazy about the Acers. Sony's kind of nice, but the support from Sony's not very good.
And it's possible to get this refurbished from a dealer, according to your guest who was online.
Yeah, you know, the thing about refurbished, and I like refurbished, if you buy it from the original manufacturer, not a dealer, but from the original manufacturer, a dealer may well have a beat-up old machine that they pretend they've refurbished. You want it from the original manufacturer, and you want to make sure it's got the full warranty and it's a current model computer. So Dell has a great refurbished stuff. And what you could do is you get it ordered on Dell.com right now, have it shipped to her, and just in time for you to arrive and get it all working for her.
Okay. That's
probably what I would do. Does she want small, big? Does it matter?
What do you mean by that?
Size of the laptop. Physical
average,
size.
Not big. Yeah, I mean, she doesn't need a big screen for anything.
The 13-inch M1310, the one that I should have gotten if I'd waited a month, is very nice. It's got a beautiful screen. It's nice,
I
lightweight.
That story.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
I can't see it.
It's about 5 pounds.
How could it happen to you?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, because I'm not paying attention to the product cycles as I should be. You'd think I'd be buying all the latest stuff. No, I just buy it, as most people do, when you need it. And instead of paying attention, and anyway.
So the 1310, you think?
I think the 1310 is very nice. They have less expensive ones. It's not very expensive. It's about $1,200. They have less expensive ones. But again, with a novice, you often want to spend a little extra. You don't want to give them trouble. You want to have a little more memory, a little bigger hard drive, because novices are less able, frankly, to handle problems than sophisticated users, right?
And the hard drive size,
Well, the biggest, you can now get 250s, but you'll pay a premium. I'd say 160 is more common, and probably not even, you don't even need that much, maybe 80. It just depends if she's going to start putting a lot of pictures and videos and so on. You're a good friend, Diane. Leo Laborde here, the tech guy. Geek day to you, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls and geeks of all ages. Leo Laborde here, the tech guy. I'm proud to be a geek, but you don't have to be to listen to this show. show by geeks for normal people. Letting you know what's going on in this geek world. This wild, fascinating, amazing geek world where everything is changing. You know, you walk down the street, it seems normal. Cars haven't changed. They're pretty much the same. You know, trees are still green. People are frolicking. But inside those homes, inside those businesses, everything's changing. People are using the internet in ways that nobody could have imagined 10 years ago. Their computers are not computers anymore. They're communications tools. They're content creation devices. People are recording their own albums, making their own movies, making their own radio shows and TV shows. And all of that's kind of unimaginable a few years ago. And it's just the beginning of what used to be called the information revolution. I don't think you can call it an information revolution anymore. I think it's more of a, it's communications revolution, interactivity revolution, a content creation revolution. It's about what I love about it. It's about empowering us as normal individuals to do those things that only people who had, millions of dollars could do in the past. That's really the story of technology since day one. Is making a tool, a lever for people to become more effective, more powerful. You know, and in the 15th century, only the king could take a bath every day. You were a peasant. You had to walk around dirty all year. You got a bath once a year. Man, some people might not mind that, but I think it's probably nice to have running water and plumbing. And I mean, if you think about it, we live as kings did 500 years ago. We feast like kings did, most of us. Some of us still not, but we're working on that. We live in a time of plenty, an amazing time, and that's what technology is now taking advantage of. It is taking us to the next level, where our leisure now is suddenly incredibly productive and creative. We can make music in a way that only Fleetwood Mac could 10 years ago. We can make movies that only Spielberg could make 10 years ago. I think that's very exciting. So that's what, and in other ways it's changing things. It's giving us a voice in politics that we might not have had before. We were talking at the beginning of the show about this big blogger convention going on in Chicago, the convention for the Daily Kos readers and writers. Now, this is just a blog. It's just a web page. A web page with millions of readers. A web page that's so important now, so influential, that 5 Democratic presidential candidates are at this convention. 5 of them. Including Senator Clinton, Barack Obama, of course, it's his hometown, John Edwards. They're courting these bloggers. I mean, this is an example of how the individual now has so much more power. I like that. So that's what we talk about. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number if you want to talk about it, ask a question, make a comment. 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. And I'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Tacoma, Washington, which here's a good example. Mike's on the line from Tacoma. Your town was in the doldrums 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was.
Deep economic depression. And it decided to become the most wired city in the nation. And it's done an amazing turnaround.
Yep. And I don't even use a wire to get online.
Do they have Civic Wireless
Clearwire.
Everywhere? That's neat.
What's that?
Clearwire is a commercial company. It's not the city doing it.
Yeah.
How do you like that? Somebody was asking me the other day if Clearwire was good.
It works pretty good.
It's wireless broadband. I don't know what they're using. Is it Wi-Fi? Is it WiMAX?
I've been told it's WiMAX.
Yeah, it must be WiMAX.
Yeah.
And how much does it cost you?
I think it's like $35 a month.
What kind of speeds are you getting?
1.5 megs up, and I think it's 256 down.
Or vice versa.
The other way around.
Yeah. So it's effectively broadband speeds at a pretty common broadband price, but there's no wires.
No wires.
You get a little
and
box.
The nice thing is with this, if I go over to work on a friend's computer, I take my modem with me, and I have high-speed internet at their house.
Excellent. And it's pretty all over Tacoma, pretty much access.
Pretty much everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, neat. I'm sorry, I don't mean to quiz you. I've wanted to talk to somebody who's using this for a while. It's clearwire.com.
Yeah.
Not available everywhere, of course, but an interesting solution. Anyway, what can I do for you?
I'm setting up a computer for my four-year-old, and I've noticed that he's been having trouble with the mouse, trying to click the buttons because the mouse is so big. And I was wondering if there's something out, a mouse or, or mouse and keyboard designed for kids.
Oh, absolutely. Go to kiddesk.net.
Okay.
Now, kids often do well with trackballs, by the way.
Okay.
Because and the idea of a trackball is you don't, with a mouse, you have to kind of pick it up and move it around. And if it's too big to handle, they can't handle it. But KidDesk makes a number of kids' mice, kids' keyboards, too, with big buttons on them.
Okay.
But you can even buy just a little laptop mouse sometimes. If it's just the problem is just a small hand.
What?
Oh, I hear him.
Right.
So what does he do? Is he doing educational software? Or?
Yeah, I'm just starting to set it up. It's an old Pentium 3 933, so, you know, which is plenty for playing his type of game.
Does he go online, or is it all...
Not yet. I'm not going to set it up to where he can get online.
I would take a look at the kids' mouse. They have a number of... kidsdesk.net. They have a number of different computer mouses. Mises? I guess it's
don't
mice.
Know how you would say that.
I know. I guess it's mice. And you know, the other thing you might, if you had a trackball lying around, I'd try that. I found the kids are very good with trackballs.
Okay.
But it just kind of depends on the kid. That's neat that he's 4 years old and he's doing that. He sees dad do it though, right?
Exactly.
He wants to do what dad's doing.
Yeah, I'm a big time geek, and you know he sees me playing on the computer all the time, and it's real funny when he's, you know, I'm sitting online typing stuff away or something. He'll act like he's doing it on the desk next to me.
Isn't that cute? Now I have to tell you, when you're putting a CD-ROM in, be very clear what it is you're putting in there.
Right.
Shiny discs, because I know a kid who watched his parents put stuff in the CD-ROM drive or the floppy drive, attempted to put a peanut butter sandwich in there.
So you gotta be not good.
Not good. You gotta be clear that this is not for food. I have mixed feelings about having kids on computers. My kids, same thing, did a lot of what we call lap computing, where they were five or six, they would do the Broderbund Living Books, because this was some years ago. They'd sit in my lap, play it, and they loved it, and they're very comfortable with a computer, and it's part of their life. As long as they don't do that to the exclusion of going out. You know where I get nervous though? Disney has an online game. A number of companies are doing this. Basically, it's World of Warcraft for little kids. It's getting them into the idea of living online in an online environment. And I really worry when I see my 8-year-old nephews are doing this. Actually, it's my cousin's kids, so I don't know what they're second cousins. And I'm watching them do this, and they're really into it. And they, you know, you collect items, and it's all the same kind of World of Warcraft stuff. You don't shoot people, you slime them. And I worry when I watch kids doing this that this is maybe starting them out on something you, I don't know, maybe you don't want them to be doing for the rest of their life. On the other hand, this is their world, isn't it? They're going to be living in places like Second Life when they grow up. Jan's on the line from Hollywood, California. Hi, Jan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Oh, you came out of nowhere.
I surprised you.
Oh, you surprised me. Hi, I'm calling because you wanted to know what blogs we read.
I'd love to know. Yeah, I'm always looking for new blogs to look at.
Oh, I don't know if they're new, but what I do is I have top three blogs of all my favorite blogs. Like I'm this is not just kissing up, but the Daily Gizwiz.
Thank you. That's our gadget podcast with Dick.
Love it.
Great.
Geek Brief.
Yes, with Callie Lewis. She's wonderful.
Right, and then Mac Rumors.
Oh, I love Mac Rumors. Okay.
And Mac Fix It.
Yep.
And Huffington Press.
Now, there's a political blog. You read Arianna Huffington. You know,
I actually only like Nora. Well, I like them all, but Nora Ephraim, and she's only on once a week.
Love her.
And she's great.
I love her. She's such a funny writer. See, that's one of the things that Arianna did, Huffington blog, be not just her.
Yes.
And it's really like a newspaper, or more like a magazine, I guess.
Yeah. And then the other fun one is the most emailed New York Times most emailed articles.
Now, you set this up on Google IG.
I have a Google homepage, and you can add.
Yeah. Add I like this. That's what I use for my homepage, too.
And then I have, like, Flickr, and it shows my pictures. They keep coming up with all my Flickr pictures.
Google.com/IG. They call it iGoogle.
Yes, it's incredible. And then, of course, I have my blog up there, which you know about. I changed the name, though, to Dogs and Cats.
The Hollywood Biatch?
It's not that anymore. It's Dogs and Cats 101.
I like it.
And it's really, it's with iTunes now, thanks to you. And maybe and John Chow.com. I have him up there, too.
Yeah, he's the expert on making money on your blog. We interviewed him on the lab on the TV show a couple of times, and he's amazing. He makes $11,000 a month.
Yeah, I haven't made that yet. I haven't made a cent, but eventually. I just have a little bone to pick. You leave your cat out at night?
No, not out. She's in the garage.
Oh.
She has a nice... Oh, she's very comfortable.
Okay.
She's got food. She's got water. We leave the garage door open during the day, and we close it at night, but I don't want her to suck the breath out of me in the middle of the night.
Got to read my blog.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, we love our cat. We love our kitty cat. And the dog does stay indoors with us. Our little happy dog. Cats scare me. Thanks for the call, Jan. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Chris Marquardt coming up, our digital photography expert with another digital camera tip. I'm looking at Jan's website, Dogs and Cats 101. What a great site, Jan. It's beautiful. Really nicely designed. with lots of good pictures. It's a great text. She's got a little paw. I don't know if you did your own design or not, but it's beautiful. It's a WordPress blog. It looks like you had a friend or a professional do the design, but it just looks fantastic. Really nice. This is how you succeed, I think, online. And this is a perfect example of what I was talking about. Here she is. She's an animal trainer, animal expert, wants to make her mark online. It's pretty simple. You get somebody to design something that looks good for you. Once the design's done, you don't have to mess with it again. You start putting content in there. She's got a podcast. It's nice. It's great. Well done. Back to the phones we go. 8888-ASK-LEO. I just talked to Jan. Let's go on to line 4. Troy in San Clemente, California. Hi, Troy.
Hey, how you doing there, Leo?
Very well. Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem. Love your show. I've been listening to you guys for a long time.
All right.
Hey, I've got a Macintosh G4. I've got something that's pretty ancient here.
Mm-hmm. Is it a cube?
No.
Not that ancient.
But I've got a program on here that's been installed here. We kind of inherited a program that's been causing the computer to delay here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Photoshop.
Oh, interesting. What's happening?
Well, every time I start up the computer, the actual Photoshop program starts up all by itself.
Well, that's not right.
No.
You don't want that.
Don't
so are you running OS X?
Yes.
Okay.
Panther.
It's probable that if you've actually turned it on to start up at login, it's actually not hard to do that with OS X. In fact, any program that's running, you can right-click the icon in the dock and select open at login. It will start running at login. And so probably by accident, You right-clicked on it, or control-clicked on it, and that menu item got selected. But it's easy to turn it off, unless this is something mysterious going on. But I believe... you're going to tell me you've tried this. You go to accounts?
Yeah.
Login options?
Yeah.
I mean, login items, I should say. And it's not in there?
No.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's interesting. And you've done this... when you log into somebody else's account, does it launch?
No, it doesn't. You know, in fact, I don't even have a login screen.
Right, because it's just, you can set the Mac to automatically log into a particular account.
Right.
But if you go to the Apple and say log out, the Apple menu and say log out, and log into a different account, that would be my first question, is does it start up there? If it does, that means it's some sort of weird thing going on system-wide. If it doesn't, that's good news, because it means it's located, limited to your particular login.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd have to look at where in that. Now, you know, on Windows, I could think of a dozen places you could put something to start up automatically, but on the Mac, I don't think so many. There are so many places. Do you have anybody else using the computer besides you?
Yes, you know, my fiance, she uses it too, but, you know, very infrequent.
Well, there. I mean, because it's a Unix box, there are some mysterious hidden little places you can get things to start up in. I'm not sure I want you to start digging around in these places.
No, I know. That's one thing that I was worried about, too. I don't want to go too deep in the system and
the first thing let's do is see if it starts up in anybody else's account.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then, you know, one thing you could do is just create a new account.
Well, you know what I actually want to do? I mean, I barely ever use Photoshop, so my question to you was, how do I go about uninstalling the program?
Yeah, well, on the Mac, you just drag it to the trash.
You know, I've tried that, though, and it keeps appearing.
You have more than one. The other thing you could do is, and what I would probably do anyway, is use Spotlight to search for Adobe.
Spotlight.
Spotlight is a little magnifying glass in the upper right-hand corner, or just do a find.
Okay.
And on search on everything that says Adobe. There'll be Adobe folders and your preferences and your applications, a lot of Adobe stuff. If you don't care, if that's the only Adobe app you have and you don't care that you're going to, you know, trash it, this will also trash your registration information, so deactivate Photoshop if you want to install it ever again. Well, it's probably an old version, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is only relevant if it's CS2 or later. They didn't activate before then. And then just throw all those things in the trash. Now, that may fix the startup problem. Or you may get an error because something's trying to start it. Here, I'll tell you some of the other locations that you can start things up in. In the Unix, in your commands, in your root directory, your home directory, you can have a .bash_profile, a .profile. These are all text files that can actually start programs. And you wouldn't show up, and your login items wouldn't show up anywhere, but just be in that text file. They all begin with .. So if you want to see what's in your root directory, open the terminal and type ls space -a. That'll show all files, including all the .dot files. I have a .bash_profile file. I do not have, and I also have a .profile, but I don't have some of the other run. There are a number of these files. And then this is why I mentioned it could be local to your account or it could be global to the whole computer. These same files also exist at a higher level, and there's a whole bunch of run commands in the Etsy folder. I'm not sure I want you to start digging around in there. If you know a Mac expert, this might be one to show them. You can just throw out all the Adobe stuff. Maybe that'll fix it. Coming up, Chris Marquardt with Photo Tips. Stay here.
And we're billboard free here.
I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy in the Tech Guy Labs, taking your calls. More calls coming up in just a bit at 8888-ASK-LEO. But before we go on, I think it's time to stop for a moment and think, stop and smell the shutter or something. It's time to talk about digital photography with Chris Marquardt. He is the podcaster and a photographer at tipsfromthetopfloor.com, a great website and podcast for people who want to learn about digital photography. And today we've got Tips from the Hood.
Tips from the Hood. I've never tried to smell a shutter, though.
Stop and smell the emulsion. I would have said emulsion, but it's digital.
Well, it's not wet photography anymore. We're doing dry photography now, yeah.
And this case, the hood that we're talking about isn't Tübingen, Germany, where Chris hangs his hat, but those lens hoods. You know, I just got a new camera, and it came with the lens came with the biggest thing that goes, that thing you screw on the end of the lens, right? Is that what you're talking about?
That's what we're talking about, the black thing that goes on the front of the lens, the one that points towards your subject.
Yeah, what the heck is that for? What does that do?
It's not there to just look impressive. It actually has a purpose, believe it or not. Basically, a lens hood does make a lot of sense. It is there to keep all the light out of the picture that doesn't belong there.
Oh.
Now, let's just pretend we take a lens apart.
Okay.
And inside the lens, we find anywhere from one to tens of glass elements, different individual lens pieces, and some of them are sandwiched together, and some of them have a distance between them. And, well, glass surfaces reflect light. That's a fact. Right. Now, they put
they're coated.
They put coatings on them to kind of avoid that, but they still reflect. I mean, a coating is only good in a certain wavelength of light, and so this whole thing still reflects light, and the light bounces back and forth between the different glass elements. Now, you've probably seen that in film or on TV, this what we call lens flare, which is like you see this streak of light going through a picture.
Oh, totally. I've totally seen it. I've seen it in my pictures.
Yes, and that can be used as an effect. I mean, sometimes I like that. It kind of gives me that feeling there's a bright sun shining in, and it kind of raises the heat in the picture.
Right.
But usually it's not a desired effect.
Right.
So what you do is, like, if you have the sun in front but not, or above or in front of you but not in the picture, that's what can happen. If the sun shines into the front of the lens without you seeing it. So that is one of the very obvious effects that stray light can do. But it's not just that obvious lens flare that we want to avoid, because actually any light that enters the lens from an angle, but that still goes into the front element of the lens, that is outside the image, will still bounce around inside the lens.
Oh, interesting.
And the result of that is a loss in contrast. That's the main thing that happens there.
Yeah.
You lose overall contrast in your pictures. So if you want your pictures to be a bit more crisp, use that lens that came with your lens. And that's also why you see most professional photographers use them, even though there are no direct light sources shining. If you take a picture of something at a white wall, the white wall will reflect light back into the
really?
Lens.
Oh, really?
So, will decrease
so even if you're inside, you should leave it on.
I leave it on all the time.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't contribute to vignetting when you're at a wide...
Well, they come in different shapes depending on the lens. Obviously, a wide-angle lens needs... the lens to be more open, so they are wider. A telephoto lens, it's more...
What I'm talking about, for people have seen it, I'm sure, is when you go into a very wide, you know, you zoom all the way in, you'll sometimes get corners, dark corners, where you're actually seeing the edge of the lens.
But if you have lots of filters on and things, that can happen.
Right.
But the lens hoods that come with your lens are designed for the lens. And
is that why it has those little dips and stuff?
There are different types. Some of them are what we call a tulip shaped.
Yeah, that's the one I have.
More dips and things. That is because that's where the widest possible setting of that lens ends.
I see.
And some are just simply round. Round tubes that you put on. My telephoto lens has a like a real tube. It looks very impressive.
I know. It extends it. It makes it look bigger and scarier.
Now, some lenses come with lenses and some don't. Now here's a fun website that I found a while ago. It's lenshoods.co.uk, lenshoods.co.uk. And what you can do there, for almost virtually any lens, you can download a PDF with the lens hood on it, print it out, trace it onto black cardboard, and basically roll it up, and it's there. It's made especially for your lens.
Oh, that is the funniest thing I ever heard of. It kind of looks a little cheesy, I have to say. You don't look like a pro when you've got cardboard on your lens.
Well, if it's black cardboard, I mean, still, it's for some people that are more on the do-it-yourself track, it's certainly a good alternative. And what I usually say, if I go out shooting pictures, I'm not out there to impress anyone with my gear. I'm there to take impressive pictures.
Oh, I'm there to impress with my gear. Because my pictures suck, so it's, you know, it's the gear or nothing.
No, they don't. You still haven't submitted one for the assignment. I guess you're really afraid of that.
I am afraid because, you know, everybody's going to mock me. The assignment this weekend, for the last few weeks, and we'll give you a few more weeks to go, is contrast. So
yes.
We won't say what that means, but just take a picture that illustrates the concept. And if you want some ideas of what people are doing, although maybe it'd be better not to look, but if you're really stumped, you can go to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group. So it's FLICKR.com. And look for the Tech Guy group, and you'll see some entries in the content. But there's still time to upload yours. So all you got to do is take some pictures that illustrate the term contrast. Upload them to Flickr. The account is free, FLICKR.com. If you're a photographer, you should have a Flickr account. And then once you've uploaded it, you can move it or copy it to the Tech Guy group, and we look for your entries. This is fun. I know. I'm going to do one. I'm going to still do one. I got that 5D. I got to do something with it.
You bailed out of the last assignment. You can't do this again to us.
Somebody sent me a really cool one I should upload from the last assignment. It was an alphabet made from the gaps between tall buildings in like New York City. It was stunning.
That is a good idea.
Oh, yeah, good idea that would take days to create. But anyway, I'll find it and upload it to a... Well, I don't know if I can because I don't know if I have the rights to it. But it's very cool looking. Very cool looking. And by the way, if you want to learn more about photography, you can learn directly from Chris, not only on his website, tipsfromthetopfloor.com, and his podcast, but from his conferences. His workshops are coming up in September and October in Fort Collins, San Diego, Minneapolis, and Port St. Lucie, Florida. I know we have listeners in all of those areas. To sign up or find out more, go to tipsfromthetopfloor.com or topfloorproductions.de. And they're four-day workshops where you will learn about photography.
And they're over a weekend. That's very important, so you don't have to take more than 2 days off for them.
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep.
All right, Chris, we'll talk again next week with some great tips from the top floor. Take care.
My pleasure.
Let's get back to the phone calls. 8888-ASK-LEO, a few minutes left in the show. And Pablo's listening in Rovia, California. Hey, Pablo, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I know we've spoken about having your wireless network at home closed so to avoid having people steal your information. Right. I'm not sure exactly how that can happen, but I still want to I don't want that to happen. The other day,
You don't want it to happen because you want to be a hippie and offer free internet to your neighbor.
Yeah, I don't mind if it's
right
out there
on.
To be used.
No, that's
but the
fine.
Thing is that the other day I noticed that my internet connection was really slow to my laptop,
mm-hmm.
and the modem was going crazy. Mm-hmm. The lights, the send and receive lights on the modem were just going crazy, and I was wondering, well, maybe somebody else mm-hmm. is connected and using my connection. So the question that I have for you is there a way or some program that I can have on my computer so that I know who is on there or if there are other devices connected to my connection?
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do, actually.
Okay.
Let me just briefly address the close off versus open. I'm with you. I mean, for a long time with Wi-Fi, I kept it open. Here's why it's kind of risky to keep it open. And I'll talk about a way you can open it safely.
Okay.
The problem with having it open is, it's you know, there's a minor issue of somebody borrowing Wi-Fi. That doesn't bother me, unless they're doing what they're doing to you, which is using a lot of it. There's a larger issue of that same person is on your network, so they can see everything you do. They can, with simple, freely available software, just watch all the sites you go to, look at all the images you see. I mean, they really can see everything you see, except for encrypted banking and encrypted purchases, that kind of thing. That's not visible.
Okay, that was my biggest concern right
there.
Yeah,
I mean, when you go to your bank, it's encrypted. But your email may not be. Probably isn't. They probably see your email address. Now, once they capture your email name and password, they don't even need to use your Wi-Fi anymore. They could just log in from their computer and get your email.
Yeah,
I don't know how you feel about that. Yes.
No, I don't like
yeah.
that.
So there's a privacy concern. There's also a hacking concern. This is a little less of a problem. They have to have more skills, but if they're skilled enough, they are on your network, and they can start to dig around on your network, and unless you're really protected, they could perhaps get in and get stuff from you.
Okay.
So there are very real security concerns with using an open Wi-Fi network. You can lock it down very simply just by turning on something called WPA. In fact, this is the only thing that works.
But I've had that, but I think it's a problem with the router itself. That I notice that when it's locked down, it's really slow. I mean, I don't know if it has anything to do with it.
It shouldn't
but I just
make any difference because once you've established a connection, you're not. You know, it is encrypted though, and I guess it could be it's could slow it down. My recommendation, if you want to provide open Wi-Fi for the neighborhood, is to get another router. You can get a Fonera router. They're about $40. They're cheap. And it's designed for this exactly. It's a wireless router you put on your regular router. You lock down your regular router, but you leave the Fonera open. Anybody can use it. It does have software to keep them from overusing it. You can actually charge them if you want. It has another advantage, though. You can, if you give away Wi-Fi using your Fonera router, you can then get free Wi-Fi anywhere you go that has a Fonera router. So the idea is they're trying to set up a worldwide network of these FON routers. It's F-O-N-E-R-A, and the routers are the site is FON.com.
And that's an interesting idea. Now, how can we see who's logged on? You would look at your tape. Are you on Windows or Mac?
Mac.
On a Mac, you'd open your network. Actually, go to your router, even Windows or Mac. Go to your router and look at the DHCP table. You could see who's been assigned an address. And you could see if there's more than just your computers on there.
All right.
So it's in your router settings. You're going to look for, it's called the DHCP table. Sometimes they use different terms for it. But it's essentially a table of addresses assigned. It's who's using your router. It doesn't give it by name, but it will tell you, and often it will if the computer's name, but at least it'll tell you if somebody outside your network is using it. Leo LaPorte here. I am the tech guy. The waning minutes of this show, but I'll be back next week and every week on this fine radio station, and I hope you'll join me. Tell your friends. Is this a record for us now? 2012 people watching the show via the internet on Ustream, almost 1,000 now watching on Stick'em. Just something I do for fun. We put a little camera up, and it's I don't know why you'd want to watch a radio show on TV, but people do that, I guess. Do people really do that? Yes, they do. Let's take a couple more calls, though, before we wrap these things up here. And Rick is on the line for Parker, Colorado. Hello, Rick!
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Going great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I called you in May and asked you a couple of questions about making a switch to the Mac Pro.
Okay. Did you do it?
I did.
And?
Wow, it's really cool.
Oh, good.
It's like I had a 2003 computer, and I bumped up to this one, so it's much, you know, much faster.
Any new computer would have been.
Yeah, right. Anything at all.
Yep. Yep.
But my question is, in Windows, when you have a file and you want to have one particular program always open that file, it's really easy to just associate it with that one program.
Right.
In the Mac, I can't seem to figure out how to always make, say, Acrobat always open all PDFs. Right. Some PDFs open in Preview, some open in Acrobat. Is there a way to force it so that it always opens?
It's pretty much the same as on a PC. The idea, this is called a file association. And if you think about it, a computer has to have some sort of database somewhere saying, well, when you open a .doc file, if the user double-clicks a .doc, obviously you don't open the .doc. You have to open an application, which then opens the .doc. So the computer keeps a database of which programs go with which. To change it on the Mac, you select any file. It's almost exactly the same as on Windows. Any file of the type you want to change. And instead of selecting properties, you select get info. So you're going to right-click on it and select get info. Control-click on it if you don't have a two-button mouse. If not, you should get one. You'll feel much happier as a Windows user. Or you could just select it and in the Finder select get info from the file menu. Or Command-I. Now you'll see open with is one of the items. And it'll say what program it expects to open that with. But you can change it by selecting any other program. And then right below it, there's a button that says... And that's what you want. That'll say, okay, from now on, when I see a .pdf, I want Preview to open it, or I want Acrobat to open it. And it'll change it. It basically updates that database to say, okay, PDFs. Rick says PDFs belong to Acrobat. Let's do it.
Mm. Okay, and do you have to, my change all or whatever, that part of that dialog box is great. Do you have to be logged in as the administrator to make that change?
Yes, you might.
Okay.
Yes, you might.
Well,
I would
tried
guess
doing
that.
This before on some file, and that file changed its association over to Acrobat. But then, and I thought I had globally changed that association, but when I opened the next PDF file that I had in mind, it opened in Preview. So I thought, oh, I obviously don't understand this.
You know, you don't have to be an administrator. You just have to select a new program.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm not running as administrator, and it's giving me that chance. So just until you select a new program, that button will be grayed out because you don't have to change it. When it's grayed out, it means you're already on that application.
All right.
Now, the Mac is a little more complicated than a Windows machine because Windows only uses the dot three or four letters to decide what to do. The Mac, for historical reasons, can also look inside the file and decide. And so
that's what I thought was going on because resource works or something.
Yeah, that's old school, man. And they don't do, and you know, that's actually a huge debate internally at Apple over whether to maintain this internal metadata or to do what Windows does and most other operating systems do and just look at the file name. And there are reasons to go either way. The nice thing about the file name is you can tell by looking at it.
Yep.
And it's easy to change just by changing the file name.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your system, sir.
You're welcome. I'm glad you're having fun with the Mac Pro.
Oh, it's man, it is so. I'm running Windows and you know, in Parallels and Mac.
Even Windows runs well on it, doesn't it?
Windows Vista Ultimate, had to get that to satisfy the license agreement. But yeah, that's actually running faster than my old copy of XP on my old machine.
So now you're happy.
I am. I'm totally happy.
Thanks for the call, Rick. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Leo.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't steal you wrong. I was always nervous when I was, and okay, you told me to buy this, and I always have to ask. But I'm always nervous. And do you like it? And I'm always relieved when they say yes. Is this Dow on the line from Concord? Hey, Dow. Or Corona. I'm sorry. Corona, California.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for holding on.
I bought my niece, who was going to college, a compact laptop. Now, she didn't care about, you know, any other specifics other than just having a laptop to do her homework on.
Of course, yeah.
But I'm sending it over, trying to put in a program so that she can type in the Vietnamese language, but Vista will not accept that. So how do I disengage Vista and put on Windows XP?
You have to, there are little hacks that you could do to have both, but really the best way and the normal way is to format the drive and reinstall XP. You have to start over. So you're going to take the XP install disk. Now, is it just that you want to be able to input Vietnamese, or do you actually want the language of the operating system to be Vietnamese?
No,
just so she could type in Vietnamese.
Just to type in Vietnamese, because it's basically just for homework. You know, she's going to college, and that's what she needs it for. I mean, she's not going to do any type of gaming or anything like that. It's just for homework. And so she was talking to another student that had a computer, and it didn't have Windows Vista. And she installed, her classmate installed Windows XP Professional. Do you need that as a student?
No. In fact, she should be able to do it in Vista. She probably just doesn't have the Vietnamese language pack.
Oh,
I think the easiest thing for her to do, I'm pretty sure, I may be wrong, but I think we'll put in the show notes here. I believe she just needs to make sure that language pack is installed. She should be able to select it, but apparently it didn't get installed. You probably can do it from the Vista disk. Absolutely, Vista supports Vietnamese input. I don't think that you need to go back to XP.
Oh, okay. Because I'm even having a hard time to find an XP program.
Yes,
they sound like
Vista.
An upgrade.
Dow, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look and find out, and we'll put this in the show notes, techguylabs.com. We'll put you need to know to install the Vietnamese language pack. I'm pretty sure it's on your Windows disk. It's probable that it just didn't get installed for some reason.
Okay.
Or you can go to, if it didn't, or they didn't provide it on the release of Vista, you should be able to download it from Microsoft. Of course, they want to work with every language in the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We'll put that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dow. TechGuyLabs.com. That's where we put all the show notes. Shuby's in there, fiddling away, working as hard as he can. You know, they just announced that soon, if not already, they'll cross the 1 billion installs of Windows worldwide. 1 billion. Imagine that. I'm out of time, but I hope you'll come back next week and join me. Visit me all week long at twit.tv, my podcast network. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great week.
Give me 60 and then we'll do the promo.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.